Good morning, everyone. My name is Melinda Murray. I am the president of the Los Angeles City Ethics Commission. This is the Ethics Commission meeting on October 20th, 2020. In conformity with the governor's executive order N-29-20, this meeting is accessible by telephone. The following access instructions are listed at the top of the agenda for this meeting. You may listen in by calling area code 213-621-2489. You may provide public comment by calling area code 669-254-5252, enter meeting ID number 161788-4780, following by the pound sign. Press pound again when you are asked for a participant ID. All public comment will be taken during agenda item 2. Welcome everybody and commissioners and Ethics Commission staff and guests to this meeting. The meeting is now called to order at 9:34 a.m. We have multiple agenda items. At this time, we will take public comment. Whoever is speaking, please be aware of the time limit. Yes.
And if we can take roll call, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Commissioner Dar?
Present.
Commissioner Davis?
Present.
Commissioner Janow?
Here.
Commissioner Murray?
Murray present.
Commissioner Orden?
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now we will take public comment on, please say your name, if you're from an organization, what organization you're representing, and what agenda item you would like to speak to. Thank you. I understand there's several callers, so if the first caller could please speak. Thank you.
Caller, caller, please state your name for the record and the item that you're speaking on.
See, there was one person trying to get into the waiting room, but I don't know if that has anything to do with the speakers.
Hi, I can go. I know that I don't know if I'm the only person, but I can start.
Hi. Thank you.
My name is Emily Gibson. I am a lobbying compliance analyst with Latham & Watkins, and I just wanted to briefly comment on item 10, the overview of lobbying laws. I am the person who's responsible for facilitating our firm's lobbying reporting across the state, including I think nearly 20 lobbyists who are registered with the City of Los Angeles. Thanks for giving me just a minute this morning. I wanted to request that the commission hold additional interested persons meetings as we continue this discussion, and seeing that there are talks of introducing some of the changes that were previously proposed a couple of years ago. I, and I know others at our firm, are concerned about some of the practical implications and difficulties that some of the proposed changes would impose. We take our ethical obligations very seriously and strive to make sure that everything we're reporting is accurate. So we have some concerns about how we will be able to do that with some of these proposals, and just wanted to put a word in for an interested persons meeting.
Thank you. Are there any other public comments?
It looks like we do not have any other speakers on the line.
Thank you. Now we'll get to agenda item number 3, the approval of the minutes for the meeting of August 28, 2020. Has anyone had a chance to review those minutes? And if so, would anyone like to make a motion to approve the minutes?
Commissioner Darrell, so move.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Orden, I second.
Thank you. Call for the question. All in favor, Nancy, I'm sorry, Madam Secretary. Call for the vote.
Commissioner Dar?
Aye, or yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Davis, yes.
Commissioner Janow?
Janow, yes.
Commissioner Murray?
Murray, yes.
Commissioner Orden?
Orden, yes.
Thank you. Motion passes. Moving on to agenda item number four, is there any possible discussion with authorized neighborhood council representatives? Seeing none, let's move on to the action items. Item number five, and if we could have our enforcement director, interim director, Ms. Pickenpah. Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Kirsten Pickenpah, interim director of enforcement, and with me today is investigator Sabrina Gonzalez. The stipulation before you for your consideration today involves respondent Lorena Socio. Ms. Socio chose not to be represented by counsel in this matter. To help ensure that the city's processes promote fairness and equity for all and to restore public trust in governmental institutions, city officials and employees are subject to the laws set forth in the Governmental Ethics Ordinance. The Governmental Ethics Ordinance contains a prohibition against the misuse or improper disclosure of confidential information. City employees are required to protect the confidentiality of information received or handled during the course of their city employment. Ms. Socio was an administrative clerk assigned to the public counter in the rent division of the Housing and Community Investment Department. She has stipulated to two counts of violating the Governmental Ethics Ordinance by improperly disclosing confidential financial information acquired in the course of her city employment. City Charter Section 706C3 establishes the penalty for administrative actions taken by the Ethics Commission. The maximum penalty is the greater of $5,000 per violation or three times the amount that was improperly recorded, spent, or received. Based on the stipulated facts and on the counts in this matter, the maximum penalty for Ms. Socio is $10,000. In mitigation, Ms. Socio cooperated in the investigation and saved Ethics Commission resources by entering into a stipulated settlement prior to the preparation of an accusation, and she has no prior enforcement history with the Ethics Commission. In aggravation, Ms. Socio's violations are extremely serious. She did not consult with the Ethics Commission about how to comply with the law, and her conduct involved a deliberate violation. Based on the facts and circumstances, staff recommends resolving this matter by imposing a penalty of $7,500 against Ms. Socio. The recommended penalty is intended to promote equitable treatment of respondents, encourage the early resolution of violations, and reflect the serious nature of the violations. Ms. Socio presented evidence of financial need, and a payment plan is recommended. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions at this time or any comments?
Commissioner Dar has a couple questions, if I may.
Please.
Sure, and thank you for the presentation. Couple quick questions, because obviously it's a very egregious fact pattern. How do we know that there were only the two violations?
There was an investigation conducted by our office as well as the referring agency, and I believe there was also an internal investigation conducted by Ms. Socio's department, and these are the only violations that we determined to exist.
Thank you. Is there any known evidence that the obtained credit card information was actually used in some fraudulent or wrongful way?
We found no evidence of loss either to the credit card customers or to the issuing bank.
Okay. And one last question for the moment, and that is the respondent currently a city employee?
She is no longer a city employee.
All right. That's my only questions for the moment. Thank you.
I have a question.
Please, Commissioner Orden.
Commissioner Orden, in following up on that one, was her resignation in part due to this event?
Yes, there was a departmental inquiry, and which eventually led to her resignation in May of 2019.
Was there any referral to any other agency of this action?
Not by our office.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from any other commissioners? I should note that Commissioner Dar asked all the questions that I had inquiries about, so thank you. Is there any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, I would like to ask someone to move to accept this stipulation for the amount requested. Is there a motion?
Commissioner Janow, I'll move.
Thank you, Commissioner Janow. Is there a second?
Commissioner Dar will second.
Thank you, Commissioner Dar. I will ask the moderator, call for the question. I will ask the moderator to take a roll call.
Commissioner Dar?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Davis, yes.
Commissioner Janow?
Janow, yes.
Commissioner Murray?
Murray, yes.
Commissioner Orden?
Commissioner Orden, yes.
Thank you. That is our only enforcement item for today. Thank you to our acting enforcement officer for all her work. I know she's had an extra burden since the resignation of Mr. Portal, so I want to thank you for all her work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving on to agenda item number six, Mr. Joseph.
Good morning, everybody. Tyler Joseph, Policy Director. This is item number six, and it is a review of recusals of Mr. Anthony Perosi, Jr., who is a member of the Board of Harbor Commissioners. And Commissioner Perosi has served on that commission since October of 2013. His current term is going to expire in June of 2025. During this review period, he recused himself from six items. Three of those involve contracts between the port and his employer, which is Boeing, and the other three came during items that involve companies in which the commissioner owns stock. Of those six recusals, four were informational or otherwise non-voting items, and overall, Commissioner Perosi participated in more than 98% of the items that came before the commission during that review period. And as a result of that, we don't believe that these recusals were significant in terms of number or impact, and we recommend you find that no divestment of those interests be ordered, and that you adopt the resolution in Attachment A for that purpose. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions from any of the commissioners or comments? Thank you, Mr. Joseph. Based upon that, the Ethics Commission, staff has recommended against finding that the commissioner, Commissioner Perosi, has a significant and continuing conflict of interest, and therefore I would entertain a motion to approve that resolution as just stated. Is there a motion?
Commissioner Orden, this is a motion to approve that recommendation by the staff.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Davis, second.
Thank you. If I could have the moderator call for the question, if I could have the moderator take roll.
Those in favor of the motion say yes. Those opposed say no. Commissioner
Yes.
Dar?
Oh, sorry.
Commissioner Dar?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Davis, yes.
Commissioner Janow?
Janow, yes.
Commissioner Murray?
Murray, yes.
Commissioner Orden?
Commissioner Orden, yes.
That's five yes votes.
Thank you. Motion carries. Moving on to agenda item number seven, we have another recusal. Mr. Joseph.
Item 7 is a review of recusals for Dr. Pedram Salampour, who is a member of the Board of Fire and Police Pension Commissioners. He's been serving on that board since 2013 also, and his current term will expire in June of 2022. And during this review period, the commission recused himself from 9 items, and all 9 of those came as a result of his wife's employment with Kaiser Permanente. The items involved discussions about the potential contract award for the administration of health and dental plan service for the pension system's members. Kaiser was one of the potential administrators being considered. And of those 9 recusals that occurred during this review period, 8 of those were informational or discussion only, and the other was approved unanimously in his absence. Commissioner Salampour has been the subject of 1 previous recusal review, which also came as a result of his wife's employment from Kaiser. At the time, we did not recommend divestment then, and the same outcome is happening now. We don't believe that these recusals were significant in terms of number or impact, and they did not in any way impact the board's ability to act. So we're also recommending here that a finding of no divestment be required and that you adopt the resolution, again, in Attachment A for that purpose. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about this one as well.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Hearing no questions, I'm going to ask that one of the commissioners make a motion based upon the recommendation of staff, finding that the Commissioner Salampour does not have a significant and continuing conflict of interest and recommends no divestment. Is there a motion?
Commissioner Davis moves. So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Commissioner Darrow second as to the approval of Item 7, Attachment A resolution.
Thank you. Call for the question. If I could have the moderator take roll.
Those in favor of the motion say yes. Those opposed say no. Commissioner Darr?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Davis, yes.
Commissioner Janow?
Commissioner Janow, yes.
Commissioner Murray?
Murray, yes.
Commissioner Orden?
Commissioner Orden, yes.
That's 5 yes votes.
Thank you. Motion carries. Moving on to agenda item number 8, campaign finance ordinance. And take it away.
All right, so item number 8, this deals with a few minor adjustments to the city's campaign finance ordinance that we are recommending in light of recent changes to the election schedule. And I'm going to give you a brief bit of background on this. There might be dates swirling all around your head, but by the time I'm finished, I promise it will be clear enough. The city and LAUSD primary elections for years took place in March. They took place in odd number of years, while the states were in June and November of even number of years. And in 2015, the city moved its elections to June and November of even number of years to sync up with the state. A few years after that, the state moved its primary elections from June up to March in order to give California more influence in the presidential primaries. So again, in order to keep the city elections aligned with the state, the voters approved charter amendments to move the city and LAUSD primary elections up from June to March to match with the state. However, in September of this year, the state moved its primary elections in non-presidential primary years from March back to June. And we understand that the city is likely to make that change also to keep the city elections in sync. And all of that will leave us with regular city and LAUSD elections occurring in sync with the state across the board again. And that will mean primary elections occurring in March during even-numbered presidential primary years and in June during even-numbered non-presidential primary. So as a result of those changes, we are recommending a few tweaks to the CFO. The first you can see here in the item under section C1, which concerns a section of existing law about filing deadlines for campaign statements, and those make specific reference to March primaries. These recommendations are pretty straightforward. They are simply to make sure that our existing filing schedule continues to work the same way when future primaries occur in different months. The changes here would preserve all of our existing disclosure requirements and otherwise maintain the status quo, taking into account that primaries will be occurring alternatively between March and June, depending on whether or not a presidential primary is occurring. And the next recommendation under Section C2 also relates to the primary timing issue. This concerns post-election fundraising. So under current city law, city campaign committees can continue to fundraise for up to 12 months following the date of the general election, and that applies whether or not the candidate actually advances to the general election. So in a situation with a March primary and a November general election, that can mean up to 20 months for candidates to fundraise for their primary election committees. So what we're recommending here under C2 is that candidates be permitted to fundraise for their city campaign committees up to 12 months following the election for which the committee was formed. So in other words, a candidate would have a uniform 12 months after the primary election to fundraise for their primary election committee, and 12 months after the general election to fundraise for their general election committee. In addition to cutting down on excessive timelines for fundraising, this would create some more uniformity by bringing the rules for these city campaign committees in line with the way that things already work for the LAUSD campaign committees. And finally, under Section C3, we have a recommendation concerning office holder committees. And this is primarily something to give both us and the elected or appointed officials some flexibility in establishing their office holder committees. This would allow the person elected or appointed to office to open an office holder account up to 2 months prior to the date they're scheduled to take office. The point of these committees is to allow the elected officials to serve their constituents and to otherwise carry out the duties that are associated with holding their office. And the language that we're proposing here would do a few things. It would give them some lead time to prepare for their transition into office. It would cut down on confusion, and it would also give us a little flexibility for some unique situations that might come up that aren't currently explicitly accounted for in the law. There are also some procedural things happening on the back end now that the consolidated elections are administered by the county. So part of this recommendation is to tweak the language about the city clerk's role in certifying the election results. But that is everything. These may be relatively minor, but we think that they're good and necessary changes that will help create some clarity in light of the new election schedule. So we're asking you to approve these recommendations and to make them effective for the 2022 election cycle, the regular 2022 election cycle, I should say. And if you do that, we will transmit them to City Council and, of course, keep you updated from there. But if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take those.
Thank you. First, I want to thank Mr. Joseph and our Executive Director Holt for these changes. I know there's constant change in the law, and it's hard to keep up, and I know it's very difficult. So I want to thank both of you for your work on this and keeping everyone up to date. I have some questions about the third item about the office holder committee. What, I know this is a hypothetical question, but what kind of issues do you think would come up that would justify having the office holder accounts be open early? Just, you know, what kind of things are you anticipating?
So allowing the incoming candidates to open up these committees up to 2 months prior to holding office is more about allowing them to prepare for the transition into office. They can use these funds for a lot of different things that are associated with carrying out those duties. So under a situation where they would be, prior to this, taking office and opening the office holder committee the same day, let's say, there's no lead time there for them to raise money for those committees to do the things that they might want to do with it. So giving them two months, we felt like was a good time a good time frame that sort of gives them enough lead time to prepare to take office, but is not so long that they're doing things with the office holder committee prior to taking office that might create some confusion among the public about who actually holds the office. So not allowing them to start raising money for that too far in advance was part of the goal here, such that people might say, well, hang on, I thought, you know, for example, this person was my council member, but I see this other guy has an office holder account. He's doing these things, and he, as far as I know, isn't taking office for a few months. So the 2-month window we thought was appropriate to sort of give them enough lead time to prepare for the things that they're going to need to do when they take office, but not so long that it would create confusion about who the actual office holder is.
Okay. Have you seen this in any other jurisdictions?
Oh, I'm sorry. Heather, did you have something to add?
Yes, if I could add to that, this is Heather Holt, the Executive Director. I would also add that this is how things work now. Under the current law, newly elected office holders are permitted to open office holder accounts prior to when they are actually sworn in and assume office. It's just that because of the way the law is written and because of the current election schedule, that really only happens about 2 months before they actually take office. The issue now, inserting the 2-month limitation is not, it's just a more concrete way to explain how it happens now and to account for the huge gap in time that we have if someone is elected outright in a March primary and not sworn in until December after a general election is held. So it's how things operate now. This is just us codifying and putting a hard limit. There's a little more flexibility now because it's not an exact 2-month window, but this is in keeping with how things have been working for many years.
Okay. And again, my question, does this happen in other jurisdictions? Do you know if there's any other jurisdictions? Not that that's telling, but do you know whether or not any other jurisdictions have adopted this particular measure?
In terms of placing hard time limits on it, that's certainly something we could find out for you.
Okay. Right. Do any of the other commissioners have any questions with regards to these three changes?
Commissioner Davis, question. You mentioned that the office holders are now allowed to fundraise for their committees prior to taking office. Are they allowed to make expenditures prior to taking office as well?
The types of expenditures that they're permitted to use the office holder account for are limited. Again, the part of the reason for that is that the city wants to avoid creating the impression that somebody who is not a current office holder actually holds that office. So yes, they are allowed to do certain things, but what they are not allowed to do is use any of that money in a way that suggests that they are currently holding the office to which they've been elected.
Are there any further questions from any of the commissioners?
Commissioner Dar, if I may.
Yes, so please.
So starting with the number three in the office holder committees, the other scenario, so I want to make sure I understand correctly, is potentially there could be a special election and the timeline is less than 2 months. Am I correct?
Yes, that's exactly
correct.
That's
what we're also trying to capture here. Okay.
Yeah, that's part of it. Another example would be if somebody were appointed to office because there is not the typical timeline associated with an election that you might otherwise have. This gives us the flexibility to account for that as well.
And without changing their standing as if they had been elected in a normal cycle. So everyone's essentially treated on parity in the same way, right?
Exactly.
So substantively, I have no problem personally with the change. I do find, in particular, the first sentence as written to be a little unclear as to what the later of would mean. And I played with this for quite a while trying to figure out how otherwise to say it, so I understand the difficulty of trying to express the concept. What if we were to simplify it? Because I do think that the later of what, because you're really talking about what's closer to the actual date of taking office. So I'm not sure, we don't want to have a proposed ordinance that may be not as clear as it could be or be ambiguous. What if we were to say that an individual may establish an office holder committee after the city clerk transmits certified election results, but no earlier, and I'm going to jump ahead to, but no earlier than 2 months before the date of when somebody takes office. so that you have it a little more easy to understand, hopefully, because we want to try to have things understandable. Maybe this could be tweaked better. But so it's either going to be when the transmittal is done, but no earlier than 2 months. Is that the right spirit of what we're trying to accomplish, but at least by what was put on paper here? Is the proposal?
It is. That's correct. Part of the reason that I believe that it was drafted this way is that the situation that Heather was referring to earlier, where there is a March primary, and let's say somebody wins, I think the spirit of what you're describing is correct, but if somebody wins a March primary outright, the reason that we are drafting it such that it is the later, and as you put it, the closer to them taking office, is that in June, primaries are close enough to them taking office in December that this isn't a huge problem. But now that some of these primaries will be held in March, we need it to be the closer of 2 months because the results are going to be transmitted much further out than 2 months prior to them taking office if they win the primary outright in March. And that big gap is sort of the thing that we're trying to avoid. If I'm understanding correctly, you're also saying you just have some suggestions about the language itself. Is that correct?
Essentially, yes. So the question is, would it be more clear? I don't want to accidentally lose something by trying to make it more, fewer words and easier to understand, possibly. If we were to say you can open up an office account when the certified election results are transmitted, but no earlier than 2 months before. So it's going to be no earlier than 2 months, capturing the potential that it could be less than 2 months, but at the same time, making it sort of without any, ambiguities of trying to figure out which one is later and what that may mean. Does that make sense?
So Commissioner Dar, if you could perhaps dictate the precise language without, so we could capture that for the record.
Sure.
Do you have a suggestion? I mean, just the precise language that you would like.
Don't want to micromanage necessarily, but I also am concerned that the existing language I found to be not as clear as it could be, and so that's what made me then struggle with. I understand how it came about the way it did because it was hard to come up with something that I think captured what everyone was saying, but without putting in this concept of, what is later or what closer or how to, come up with, all these things that can result in someone misinterpreting the intent.
I have just one. What's the plan for communicating these changes? And would that plan include being able to address Commissioner Dar's concern without having to address the language we're voting on today?
And for the record, that's Commissioner Janow.
Correct.
Yes, thank you. That's a great question. These type of changes are always communicated to the candidates. This information is included in our candidate guides. It will be communicated to the elected officials. We do put out press releases about our recent legislative changes, anything that this commission approves and is approved by City Council. So yes, it is entirely possible to, and we certainly would do exactly as you're suggesting and make it very clear in everything that we put out about this specific change, how exactly this law would work, how it would apply to everyone that it applies to. And we'd be happy to speak with you about that if you have any suggestions as far as what specific language you might like to see in something like that. But yes, that is something that we can include separately and even word differently if you'd like to see it that way in some sort of communication directly with the people who are impacted by it.
Okay. So what I would like to suggest, and I would like input, of the three proposals, if we don't have any problems at all with the first two, go forward on those, and perhaps the proposal with regards to the office holder committees, taking into account what Commissioner Dar concerns are, perhaps we could save that for the December meeting. Is that something that Commissioner Dar and the other commissioners and Mr. Joseph would be comfortable with?
Commissioner Dar has a couple comments on the first, the A1, not the second one. So
okay, well,
I'm just taking them in the order that we started.
Okay, so if you could go on to your next concern, Commissioner
Sure.
Dar.
And so, and one other item on office holders, the last sentence, which is new, that's proposed, just where it says, establish an office holder committee at another time I would suggest, but I'm not as concerned. Maybe better words would be at any other time, but that's less substantive. And then I'd like to turn to the C1, which is the details on changing the filing deadlines for campaign statements. I believe, maybe I'm missing it, but somewhere in the editing process, I think it was unintentionally deleted the heading A, which I'm going to speculate was to batch and conform similar to B and C, but we don't have a heading A unless I'm missing it here. And I believe A would be for an election cycle and an even number year with primary election held in March, colon. And it seems as if that's just missing by accident. And again, if I'm missing it, I apologize.
Mr. Joseph?
That is correct. There is an A there. A in the current law is the what we refer to as the third pre-election filing. We have moved that, or the suggestion is to move that to the third place instead of the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So the way the deadlines read is in chronological order in terms of when an election would occur. But Commissioner Dart is correct. There should be language as a subsection A prior to paragraph 1 on page 2 that does say for an election cycle in an even numbered year with a primary election held in March. That is correct. Great catch.
That was it. It was just it appeared to have been accidentally left out somewhere in the editing process.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Commissioner Dart, any other with regards to that? The filing deadlines, do you have any other comment on that?
I do not, and that's the end of my comments and for the moment on the three items, the three different languages.
Okay. Do any of the other commissioners have any comments or suggestions with regards to the language? Thank you. Based upon that, would someone like to entertain a motion on these items, whether to approve, disapprove, table, any suggestions? Is there a motion on the table?
Commissioner Murray, just to clarify a point of...
Sure.
Sorry.
Oh, I can't hear you.
Just a sort of a point of information. So at the moment, is there any urgency as to our taking action on these for transmittal to the council today versus at our next meeting? I was a little unclear on that. Is there any time issue concern?
I don't believe so, but I'd like to hear from Mr. Joseph and Executive Director Holt on that.
There is no urgency, is the short answer. However, the more quickly we act, because this would apply to the 2022 election cycle, which is already underway, the better notice we will be giving to the people who are participating in that election. We can control our timeline, but we can't control the council timeline. So the sooner that we get our input to them, the more likely they will be able to address our recommendations in a timely way for the people who are currently part of that election cycle.
Okay, thank you. What I would suggest based upon the concerns and the comments that have been made, perhaps we could revisit this item at the December meeting and tweak the language a little bit so we have everything all in line, and that would make more clarity at the time we present it to the council if the motion is approved. So if we could tweak the language as suggested by Commissioner Dar and other comments, that may be a better way to proceed, just so everybody's comfortable and everybody's on board.
Commissioner Dar would be fine with that, and I'll also be happy to put in writing the revised sentence so it could be considered by staff, so that we, since that I believe was being requested also, so I'll do that separately after the meeting.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Dar. All righty, moving on to item number 9, the professional services agreement.
Hi, Heather Holt,
oh, take it away.
Yes, thank you. Number 9 is an extension to an existing contract that we have with TLC Interpreting and Translation Services. This would just permit us to continue to use their services in our enforcement work and in any other capacity that we might need it, actually, for the next year.
And has everyone had an opportunity to review that? Are there any questions?
Commissioner Darr had one or two questions, if I may.
Yes.
Do you have any approximation as to approximately how much the commission spent in 2018, 2019 on interpretation and translation services, just to have some context?
I don't have an approximation. I have an exact amount, and it was $0 last fiscal year.
Okay. That's an easy answer.
Yeah.
And if so, I'm just trying to gauge the 20,000 amount as to, which is the reason for my question, just so I'm not being mysterious about the purpose of my asking.
Never in any year that we have had this contract, we have never even gotten close to bumping up against that 20,000.
I was going to say, yeah. I don't think we've used it since I've been on the commission.
Is there any reason why we suspect that we haven't had to use any of the services in any meaningful way for, it may just be this has just been an absence of it, but for our hearings where they would be available?
Well, it depends on the parties that are involved. If we have a witness or a respondent who requires those services, then we absolutely need to take advantage of that. We just have not been in a position in previous fiscal years in which we have needed to do that.
Okay.
But it does happen.
So the potential issue of whether 20,000, what happened if it was to be exceeded, doesn't sound as if, at least based on recent practices and experiences, is likely to be a scenario. So that may be the simple information I need just to answer that own potential issue for anyone. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hearing no further inquiries. Is there a motion to approve the resolution and attachment A for agenda item 9?
Commissioner Orden moves to approve the recommendation in item 9.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Commissioner Darrow, second.
Thank you. Call for the question. If I could have the moderator take roll.
The question is on the adoption and approval of the last motion made.
Yes, resolution, agenda item 9, attachment A, with regards to the professional services agreement.
Those in favor of the motion say yes. Those opposed say no. Commissioner Darr?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Davis, yes.
Commissioner Janow?
Commissioner Janow, yes.
Commissioner Murray?
Murray, yes.
Commissioner Orden?
Commissioner Orden, yes.
That's 5 yes votes and the motion carries.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Now let's move on to item number 10. Moving on to, I think that's the end of the action items. Now we're moving on to the informational items. We're going on to the overview of lobbying laws. For those of you who are newer to the commission, the previous commissioners went through actually a two-year process trying to reform lobbying laws. We had extensive comments from the community. We had a town hall. We talked about a lot of different issues, and it took us a long time, but Commissioner Orden was involved in that process, as was Commissioner Davis. And there had also been a previous package that went to the City Council that it didn't get too far. We tweaked it, and we thought we had a great package. However, because we do have two new wonderful commissioners, we wanted to revise these issues because the City Council did not take our recommendations. For reasons that are unclear, whether they were uninterested or unwilling, is unclear. As you know, they did take our developer ban, and they did take up our matching funds. So this is the trifecta that we want to get pushed through, and I just wanted to have an overview of what happened with us. And again, Mr. Joseph did an excellent job in the town halls previously. We had two separate ones, and all of the commissioners who were on that previous commission were present for at least one of those. So I want to thank them for their service, and I want to thank the staff. We did a lot of work on this, but we're going to have to sort of start. We have to start up again. And so with that, I would ask Mr. Madam Moderator?
It looks like we may have a late comment.
Okay.
So I will take that. If anybody is on the line and would like to make a public comment, please dial *9. Callers, if you would like to make a public comment, if you can please dial *9 to raise your hand, and we will go ahead and allow for 2 minutes. And I do not see any raised hands at the moment. If you'd like, we can circle back after the presentation.
Yes.
Excuse me, I'm not sure if this is the same caller that Nancy is referring to, but I did get an email that was also addressed to Executive Director Holt as well as City Attorney Renee Stottle that came in after the meeting started. It is from Jim Sutton, who represents the LA Lobbyist Association, and he is saying that he is on the phone and in the waiting room and has been trying to make known that he wants to comment on item number 10. I believe there, I don't know if he is still actually in the waiting room. There is a 415 number. I'm not sure if that is him. But he says he's trying to do everything that is required to alert us that he's in there trying to make a comment. I'm not sure if that's the caller that we were trying to access just now, though.
That's right, Mark. I currently do not see anybody in the waiting room. If anybody has any public comments, if you can please dial *9. And my co-moderator is also checking for that.
Just one comment while we're figuring all that out. Thank you for those of you in attendance who are listening. We will be taking these items up again. If you have public comments that you'd like to put in writing, please give us those before the next meeting so we can discuss those items and we can have those items ready. I know there are certain individuals who tend to, the morning of the meeting, have commentary or have late commentary, and it makes it very frustrating for us. So if there's anyone who would like to make commentary or submit documentation, please do so after you get the agenda items and before the meeting, so the commissioners will have time to review your comments. And again, we welcome comments from all individuals. So I want to thank everyone for participating. I know there was a lot of commentary and input, and we want input from the community and our community partners. I just wanted to say that for future reference for anybody who is listening. And Madam Commentator.
And we do have a one raised hand, so
thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and caller, would you please state your name for the record and the item that you're speaking on?
For the record, at the top of my screen, this is Commissioner Davis, it does say a 415 is still waiting to be submitted.
Okay.
Caller, please state your name for the record and the item that you're speaking on. You can go ahead and dial star 6 to unmute if you are unable to unmute otherwise. Star 6 to unmute.
I just pressed star 6. This is Jim Sutton. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, I apologize for that. Maybe that was the problem all along. I'm now calling in another phone. So again, I apologize for the difficulty of getting into the meeting. This is Jim Sutton, and we represent the Los Angeles Lobbyists Association, the trade association of government affairs professionals active in the LA area. And we have had the privilege of working with staff and the commission on numerous iterations of various changes to the lobbying law and interpretations of the lobbying law for the past 20 years. And we look forward to, again, working with the staff and the commissioners on whatever the new proposal turns out to be. I think we did submit a letter earlier this morning, and we also provided the commissioners with some of the correspondence that we submitted outlining some of the concerns, policy and logistical concerns, with the proposal as it was submitted to council. But I think our global comment now is that it's a unique time for the commission to really take a broader, more holistic look at how the lobbying law can increase transparency and increase public confidence. Since the commission looked at this issue 3 or 4 years ago, as you all know, City Hall has been embroiled in a wide-reaching corruption scandal. And how the lobbying law may or may not fit in to those issues about public trust and unbiased decision-making and transparency, I think warrants really not just a fresh look at the lobbying laws, but a much broader look. What are the goals of the lobbying law? Do the existing forms really provide the information, provide the public with relevant information? Is the electronic filing system that was set up, Mark, you tell me, 15 years ago, is there a better way of getting this information to the public? And of course, as the prior caller said, the members of our association, all of whom want to comply with the law, believe in full transparency, but believe that at least the last proposal, the commission staff did not take into account how the increased frequency of filings, the increased questions, really was an unnecessary burden on the firms that were just trying to comply with the law. So just to wrap up, thank you very much again for the opportunity to work with you on whatever these proposed changes might be, and urge the commission to I don't want to say start from scratch, but to really take a different approach this time around. Think about what's happened in the city for the past few years and figure out the way the lobbying law fits into that instead of what was done before, simply requiring more paperwork, which doesn't necessarily achieve the goals the commission wants to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sutton. Are there any more callers on the line? Madam Moderator,
do we see any other callers with raised hands on the line? And again, to raise your hand to speak, please dial star 9.
We'll give it just another minute or so. And then we'll hear from Mr. Lowe, who we're going to miss very much, and Mr. Joseph.
There do not seem to be any additional public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Lowe. I know I'm going to miss you, and you know why. Thank you. This is your last hurrah. And who's going to keep me on my toes with regards to certain things? But anyway, and you know what they are. Thank you, and this may or may not be your last presentation. I hope it's not, but it may be, because I know you're going on a retirement bill. So thank you for your service to the city and to the Ethics Commission. And with that, take it away.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. I'll address those in just a second, but I believe my colleague, Mr. Joseph, has some very short remarks first.
Great.
They will be very short. Thank you to President Murray for a very good summary of how we got here, where we are currently, and where this is going. And thank you to Mr. Sutton for his comments as well. I just wanted to say briefly that item 10 is an overview of the existing city lobbying laws. This will be in the form of a PowerPoint presentation. You can find copies of the slides in attachment A to this item. This is an informational item, and the purpose is to briefly familiarize you with or to refresh you on the current law, so that we'll be able to talk a little bit more about it at our next meeting. And for the PowerPoint, I'm going to hand this off to Mark Lowe, who's our lobbying program manager, and he will walk you through this. So thanks very much.
Great. For the record, I am Mark Lowe. This is the last time I'll be saying I'm the lobbying program manager. And I'd like to thank the commission president. It has been a pleasure serving under you, as well as for our other commissioners. I've been here 21 years, which is the life of a child through adult age. So I feel like I've aged quite a bit and hopefully become an adult while I've been here. But thank you to my colleagues, the executive director, the deputy executive director, and everyone for putting up with me all these years. And with that, I will move on to my presentation. Okay, so hang on just a bit. I want to get into the actual view that I need to see. Okay, so this presentation that Mr. Joseph referred to is an overview, and it presents an opportunity for the staff to present to you the current lobbying laws and what's on the books right now. For some of you, these terms are going to sound very familiar, and some of what is going to be presented is going to be a review for you. But for our newer commissioners, this is a chance to get your feet wet. And you'll hear some history, you get to learn some new terms, and overall, you'll see the scope of lobbying activities that the ordinance regulates. Okay, so if we can go to the next slide, please. Okay, so just a little bit of history. Going back to 1967, back then the city clerk regulated the activity of individuals who were trying to influence city decision makers, and those individuals were referred to as legislative advocates. If we move on into history, in 1990, the City Ethics Commission was established by the voters. And the administering of the laws governing legislative advocates came under the regulation by the committee. And in 1994, legislative advocates became known as lobbyists, and the municipal lobbying ordinance was enacted. From 2000 to 2003 through 2008, there were various ordinance amendments. I'll point out in 2006, there was a charter amendment, which came to be known as Measure R. And in 2013, there was an ordinance amendment affecting mandatory electronic filing of reports by lobbying entities. I'll also point out that in 2008 and 2018, there were two comprehensive lobbying ordinance reviews, both which were submitted but transmitted but never adopted by the City Council. Next slide, please. So in 1994, the first municipal lobbying ordinance was adopted. And when that ordinance was adopted, the following findings were also adopted at the same time, and I'm just going to run through them. Basically, citizens have a right to know who is attempting to influence city decisions. It is also essential to city confidence that there is complete disclosure with regard with regard to lobbying disclosure, to preserve that governmental integrity. It is in the public interest to ensure that lobbyists communicate truthfully and do not place city officials under personal obligation. And regardless of their background, training, qualifications, job title, or whatever they call themselves, all people who qualify as lobbyists must be subject to the same regulations. Next slide. From this point, a few of the following slides are going to focus on defining some of the important terms that will come up as you look through the ordinance and in your upcoming review. So first up is the term lobbying entity. So basically, that is these three types of entity which we'll cover as we move forward. A lobbying entity can be a lobbyist, a lobbying firm, or a lobbyist employer. And breaking these terms down, a lobbyist is, and this is a two-part definition. First, it is an individual who is compensated to spend at least 30 hours in a consecutive three-month period engaged in lobbying activity. Second part is there must be at least one direct communication with a city employee in an attempt to influence municipal legislation on behalf of another person in that same three-month period. Moving on, a lobbying firm is an entity that is, one, entitled to receive compensation of $1,000 or more in a consecutive three-month period, also for engaging in lobbying activities. And two, there first has to be an individual, a partner, an owner, a shareholder, officer, or employee who qualifies as a lobbyist. Finally, the last type of lobbying entity is a lobbyist employer, and this refers to any entity other than a lobbying firm that employs a lobbyist in-house that lobbies only on behalf of that entity. So we've referred to lobbying activities in some of the previous slides. So exactly what types of activities does that include? So here's a list. It's not it's not all the activities that would include, but it does include things like having a direct communication with a city employee, the drafting of ordinances, resolutions, or regulations. It can also include providing advice or strategizing with a client. Also activities like researching, investigating, information gathering, or attempting to influence a third party, such as the community through press relations or similar type of activities. Also included in lobbying activities are things like attending or monitoring city meetings, hearings, or other events, and engaging in similar conduct. So what is municipal legislation? Municipal legislation, simply defined, is any legislative or administrative matter that is proposed or pending before any city agency. There are some exceptions to municipal legislation, and these include when a person requests advice or interpretation of a law or policy, or any party that is responding to a City Ethics Commission enforcement proceeding. Also accepted from municipal legislation is a ministerial action that involves no attempt to influence. For example, the act of filing a form at a public counter at an agency, that would not be considered municipal legislation. Any action that is relating to collective bargaining agreements, but that does not include any actions taken by the mayor, city council, or their staffs. And finally, the preparation of any map, plan, list, photo, or other document that is prepared for the document, the planning department, that simple or those simple acts are not considered municipal legislation. Now, there are certain parties that the lobbying laws do not apply to, and those include public officials and government employees like you or I that are acting in their official capacity. Also exempted are media outlets that publish news, editorials, or paid advertising in their normal course of business. Also exempted is any person whose only act is submitting a bid, response to an RFP or RFQ, or is negotiating a contract. Again, there is a caveat, you know, that it's not included if there are attempts included to influence the mayor, city council, their staffs, or commissioner along with that submission. And finally, 501c3s are also exempted if they provide pro bono services to indigent persons and they receive government funds for those services. Okay, so now we know who's covered and not covered. Let's move on to what is required to those who qualify under the law. First up, registration. That's required by lobbying entities. And basically, there is a statement that identifies who the entity is and the city agencies that entity is authorized to lobby. Lobbying firms also must identify the clients that have retained the firms for their representation and the matters for which they are lobbying city officials in the city. Registration must occur within 10 days after the end of the month in which a lobbyist qualifies. And registration is required annually. All lobbying registrations terminate automatically at the end of the year on December 31st. Excuse me, taking a drink of water there. All registrations are filed through the Lobbyist Electronic Filing System, also known as LEFS, and there are fees to register, which amount to $450 for lobbyist who qualifies, as well as $75 for each client that must be registered. For those lobbyists who qualify in the fourth quarter or for clients who lobbyists start representing in the fourth quarter, those fees are reduced by a little bit. After registration, any entities who are registered have to file quarterly disclosure reports. Basically, those are statements disclosing the activity and payments during the quarter, and we'll elaborate that in our next slide. They are due by the last day of the month following each calendar quarter. For example, the third quarter closed on September 30th, so we have a filing that is due on October 31st ordinarily, but since that falls on Saturday this year, it's going to be due on November 2nd. And again, these disclosure reports are filed via LEFS or the Lobbyist Electronic Filing System. So I bet now you're wondering if all lobbying entities have to file the same information, and that's a very good question. On this page, you see we've created a chart for you, and it's an easy way for you to see at a glance what type of disclosures each type of entity has to report. So you'll see for city agencies lobbies, that only applies to lobbyists and firms, but if you look further down the chart, activity expenses, contribution, fundraising done on behalf of city candidates and office holders, and fundraising solicitation and behested contributions of $1,000 or more are all required to be reported by all types of entities. So this chart may be very helpful to you as you look at the ordinance in your future meetings. Next slide. There are also a few disclosures that are separate from the quarterly disclosures that we talked about, and these next few slides refer to those. First up is fundraising solicitation. And these occur when a lobbying entity produces, pays for, mails, or distributes more than 50 similar fundraising solicitations. At the time that the solicitation is first distributed, a copy must be filed with the commission. So that's that disclosure. Next slide, please. One business day notices have to be filed when fundraising has reached specified notice must be filed when fundraising has reached specified threshold amount on behalf of an office holder. Okay, and those thresholds are $15,000 for a council member or $35,000 for a citywide office holder, and it occurs in the previous 12 months. Once those threshold amounts are reached, Form 43 must be filed with the City Ethics Commission, the City Clerk, and the office holder by those entities that reach those fundraising totals. Finally, this disclosure applies to neighborhood council communications when done by lobbying entities, and they have to provide written communication with neighborhood councils on behalf of clients, and in that there has to be a disclaimer in the communication that identifies the lobbying entity and the client, and there is information as to how clear the disclaimer has to be and in what type of font it has to be in and how it must contrast to the background. This final disclosure actually does not apply to lobbying entities and only applies to persons other than lobbying entities who incur expenses of $5,000 or more in a quarter for activities that are designed to influence city action, like community relations or erecting a billboard, as long as these payments are not already being disclosed by a lobbyist or lobbying firm. In other words, it's separate from the money that this party might otherwise be paying a lobbyist or lobbying firm. This is what this Form 37 captures, and it is filed with the Ethics Commission and reports the matters lobbied and the total amount that was expended in connection with that. Okay. This next slide refers to prohibitions of lobbyists and lobbying firms, and it includes the making of campaign contribution to a city candidate or office holder if the lobbyist or lobbying firm is required to register to lobby the office of that candidate or office holder, or the office that that candidate is holding or is seeking to hold. Okay. Also, lobbyists and lobbying firms are not allowed to make or offer to make a gift to a city official if they are required to register to lobby that official agencies. And they also may not act as an intermediary or act as an intermediary to make or arrange a prohibited gift to a city official. Sorry about that. Finally, these prohibitions also do apply. Lobbyists and lobbying firms are not allowed to place a city employee under any sort of personal obligation. They are not allowed to deceive or attempt to deceive a city employee regarding a city matter. They can't introduce, for the purpose of later being employed, a city matter to secure its passage or defeat. And obviously, they're not allowed to communicate with a city employee in the name of a non-existent person, or they can't say that they're lobbying on an existing person without that person's consent. With regard to enforcement, the ordinance provides that the commission is allowed to do the following activities with regard to its enforcement powers, which may include audits of lobbying entities. The commission can also levy late filing fees with regard to late reports of $25 a day up to $500 per late report. Administrative penalties may be levied, and if a lobbying entity is found to have engaged in political money laundering, they can be debarred for up to 4 years. And there are also civil and criminal enforcement penalties that may be levied if they violate the law. That's a very brief overview of the lobbying laws. If you have any questions, Tyler or I are happy to answer them.
Thank you. Mr. Lowe, I know this is all, it's very detail oriented. And again, the commission's been a long time working on this before. And I want to thank you again, Mr. Lowe, for your service. We're going to be taking up these matters again. And Commissioner Orden, I'd like you to make a few comments because you were also one of the commissioners that was looking into this. So if you have any words of wisdom for our newest commissioners, I'd really appreciate it if you could make a couple of comments, please.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm not sure words of wisdom, but I do think it is important for us to take a fresh look and I recognize we do not want to be micromanaging or filing papers for the sake of filing papers, but I think even without getting any of the desired improvements that we had recommended, one of the things I think has been successful is requiring a more specific and accurate disclosures in the various quarterly reports so that the public today at least can get a very much better sense of who it is really that is a lobbyist or a lobbying firm and what projects they're working on and the degree and the intensity of that lobbying. So one of the things that is most important that we still were able to accomplish, I think, over these last years is that compilation analysis of the money that is being spent to lobby the elected officials and high-ranking officials in the city. So it may be that disclosure is still where we need the most focus and to make that truly meaningful. I think Executive Director Holtz could tell us and others of the amount of time that the public actually is now looking at our disclosures, which are available online. The numbers to me seem quite impressive. It seems to be a service, but I'm looking forward to looking again fresh to see if there isn't more that we can do to ensure the kind of both transparency and compliance in the current lobbying laws.
Thank you so much. And with that, in the interest of time, because this is a longer meeting, because we have several action items, and also because we got the overview of lobbying, in the interest of time, I'm going to skip right to the Executive Director's report. So, Executive Director Holt, take it away.
Thank you. I just wanted to highlight a couple of staff transitions for you. The first is that we're very happy to welcome Dina Wawa to the enforcement team. She comes to us from the San Bernardino County Probation Department, and she is our newest investigator. She has jumped in with both feet and is already making herself useful. So welcome, Dina. The other is, in addition to Mark Lowe, who is retiring through the SIP program on December 5th, we are also saying goodbye to Eric Chan, who is our Director of Audits on December 5th. He's also participating in the SIP program. Eric is one of the Commission's original employees and has been with us for just under 30 years. So between Mark and Eric, we are losing more than 50 years of Ethics Commission experience. So that is a significant professional loss.
But they are also both great members of the team. So it is also a personal loss. We are sorry to see them go, and I just wanted to thank them publicly for their service to the Commission for all of these years and to wish them both the very best in their next chapters. And I'm happy to answer any other questions that anybody has.
Right. Thank you, Executive Director Holt. And with that, we have one item before we depart today, update on the executive search process. That process is underway. The job announcement has gone out. We have received several applications. The deadline for applications is October 23rd. As you already know, Commissioner Davis and I are serving on the subcommittee. We will be reviewing the applications and conducting interviews in November. At the December meeting, we will have a recommendation, we hope, have a recommendation for the next executive director to fill Ms. Holt's very, very, very large shoes. And we will take that in closed session at the December meeting. So that is the timeline that we have. And I also wanted to thank Mr. Lowe and also Mr. Tan for their service to the city. I also want to commend Commissioner Orton and Commissioner Janelle for your work on the enforcement team as that subcommittee. Your input is invaluable, and I want to thank you for your contributions, and thank you for continuing to serve on that committee. I also want to, again, thank our acting enforcement officer for her continued work, and we welcome a new person to that team. I'm very excited to work with her as well. And if there are not any questions or comments, we can adjourn the meeting at 10:55, Madam Moderator, or does anyone see any other items that haven't been covered? That's the only announcements that I have. And again, we're going to be dealing with lobbying reform on our next several meetings. And for those of you who are on the call or are not on the commission, like I stated before, and I usually state this, if someone has written materials that they would like to provide the commissioners, please don't do it the morning of. It is a burden on our staff who is preparing for the meeting. And if you could do it when you get the agenda item, please submit those items before the day of the commission meeting so we can review those items. And if the person is making any comments or feedback, we want to have those materials so we could be more fruitful in our discussion. And with that, it is, again, I know this is a longer meeting than usual. At 10:56, is there a motion to adjourn the meeting? We can hang out all day if you guys want.
Commissioner Orton moves to adjourn the meeting.
Is there a second?
Janelle, a second.
Thank you. Call for the question, Madam Moderator.
Commissioner Dar.
Commissioner Dar, yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Davis, yes.
Commissioner Janelle?
Janelle, yes.
Commissioner Murray?
Murray, yes.
Commissioner Orton?
Commissioner Orton, yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Meeting is adjourned. I will see everyone in December. Happy Halloween, happy Thanksgiving, and I will see everyone in December. Thank you.
Thank you
very
much. Bye. Bye. Yo.
Hey.
You got still on.
The recording has stopped.